All right. Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, depending on where in the world you happen to be. My name is Christopher Harrison. This is Web Wednesday, the show where I bring on people that are much smarter than me to talk about cool web dev technology. And this week, I'm really pleased to be joined yet again by Jeremy Lichtness. I first had the opportunity to work with him many, many, many years ago on a little thing called MVA, Microsoft Virtual Academy, for those of you who may remember that. Talking about Entity Framework and some cool .NET stuff. And a little while ago, we had him on to talk about Blazor and to do some cool things there. And he said, "Hey, I want to come back and I want to talk about something else, which is GraphQL." And at least for me, GraphQL is one of those things where I keep seeing it. I sort of like know what it is, but I really don't. And so when Jeremy said, "Hey, I want to come on and talk about it," I'm like, "Hey, that sounds like a fantastic idea." So that's what we're going to wind up doing today. We're going to take a look at GraphQL. We're going to take a look at Entity Framework and some of the cool things that that can do to help you out. And we'll build and you'll see how you could bring that together with Blazor. But enough of me babbling. Let me go ahead and bring Jeremy on. So Jeremy, thanks again for joining. Greatly appreciate it.
My pleasure. I'm excited. GraphQL is something that a lot of people are talking about. I've been researching it for many, many months now. And the more I look into it, the more I understand why it's increasing in adoption.
That's cool. I dig that. It's one of those where I remember seeing it a while ago, but and I put that on the list of things I know I need to get in and explore, but just haven't yet. So this'll be a good opportunity. But before that, like, how have you been? What's been going on?
I've been great. I was talking earlier. The forecast has several clear nights in the Wednesday night, Thursday, and Friday night. And I have a telescope that I take deep sky pictures with. It's a new hobby of mine. So super excited about that. Work's been going great, working on cool projects like GraphQL. So I'm having a ton of fun with that. And we were talking earlier about working out and training, and I was sharing some of the creative ways for hot days like this. I can go inside in my air-conditioned house, put on a VR headset, and do a virtual reality workout. So having a lot of fun with that.
I love that. We're actually going to have Ashku on in, I think it's next week, if I remember right. And if you're not familiar with her, she does an awful lot of MR, VR. So we'll have to, maybe ask her about some of those things. I know that there's a lot of people that really like that. And so you were mentioning like there's a boxing game with like balls or something that you wind up having to hit.
Yeah, and then there's the really popular one, which is Beat Saber, where you actually have lightsabers that you're swiping to music. So, yeah, what could possibly go wrong? Lightsabers, music, VR.
Just make sure
It's a
you've
good
got a
time.
clear space around you, I'm
That's
guessing,
right.
is the important part there. That's cool. That's awesome. Yeah, and for anybody who's not familiar with the Pacific Northwest, our summer doesn't unofficially start here until July 4th, as most people would tell you. And so we still get a fair amount of cloud up until then. So we've had a quite a bit of cloud, and yeah, it's we're finally getting sun, which is always wonderful in Seattle.
It is always a good thing. In fact, I found astronomy software forecasts based on what nights are cloudless because you want those clear skies. Those forecasts are actually serving me better than just regular weather forecasts because they give me by the hour when there's no cloud cover. So I started using those over regular forecasts, so to speak.
That's great. That's great. I love it. Cool. Well, why don't we start talking about GraphQL? And for anybody who's tuned in before, they probably know that I'm very much a all about just, starting with the basic question. So let's start with the basic question. What is GraphQL?
So GraphQL in a nutshell is an interface to data for front ends. That's basically the easiest way I would state it. It's a specification for a query language for APIs. And if you're familiar with, for example, REST or WCF, it follows a similar pattern in that you have a request that you package up, you send that request, you get a payload back, but it specifies how you shape that payload. It also specifies how you mutate data. So it just like REST, you know, you have post and put versus get. So there's ways that you specify that in GraphQL. But what really makes it shine is that it allows a single front end to multiple backend interfaces. In other words, I can use a single endpoint to query different data sources, combine those data sources, and do some interesting things like even real-time subscription-based observation of data streams. So there's a lot of flexibility. And since we're showing some bullet points I put together, I love this quote from one of the co-creators of GraphQL, a data fetching API powerful enough to describe all of Facebook. So they really literally wanted to be able to have an endpoint that could do everything that you do on Facebook. And it turns out that it works out really well for other scenarios. And I'm just going to give this high-level overview because I want to jump into code and explain things through code. But one of the cool things about a GraphQL request, which we'll see what that looks like in a little bit, is that it operates on this concept of resolvers. So I might ask, in this example at the top, you see user ID, name, user preferences, storage, whatever. So I may ask for all these pieces. They may exist in different databases and backends and even behind legacy APIs. But with GraphQL, what I can do is take that, write a resolver for each piece fragment of data, and have that go off and do its thing, and then basically glue that response together and send it back, which is pretty cool piece of functionality or capability, if you will.
That looks cool. So I'm curious here real quick, because you mentioned REST. And for anybody who's not familiar, REST, of course, stands for Representational Stateful Transfer, which, of course, is completely meaningless. And honestly, it's the only reason I ever remember what it stands for. But REST, of course, it's an agreed upon structure for how it is that we're going to interact with a web server. So when I do get, what I'm saying is give me some data. When I do post, what I'm saying is I want to create data. When I do put, what I'm saying is I want to update data, etc. Now, with REST, that's to a certain extent kind of where it stops. And yes, anybody who wants to get overly pedantic is probably going to go, well, that's not really it. Okay, fine. But in a lot of ways, it doesn't sort of give that whole structure on like being able to query data and so forth. It is, and again, oversimplification here, it's about this framework where I'm going to say get, that's going to get data, I'm going to do post, and that's going to create data. But it sounds like with GraphQL that it's able to go then beyond that it's not just a get is going to give me data, but it's going to give me some agreed upon mechanism with which I can then query and filter and sort that data like I might with a SQL query, or am I, you know, going too far with this?
No, you're very much on base. So it's an agreed upon contract that does a couple things. One is you can ask any GraphQL endpoint, what capabilities do you have? What can I do? What can I ask for? So you're able to do that. So it's like OpenAPI or Swagger and REST rolled into one. The other thing, though, is you can shape the data response. You can say, I'm only interested in these two items. Now, if you do that with REST, there's creative ways that you have to do that, like specify it as a payload on the request, or you might have to go back to your backend developer, if you're a front-end developer, and say, hey, look, I really only need name. I don't need 15 fields for this. Can you provide another endpoint or a parameter for that? GraphQL has that built in, so you always shape the data. And what I'm going to show you is that can go all the way down the stack. So it's not just shaping data before it serves it. It's even down to the database level.
So,
which is quite powerful.
So you hit the point that I was trying to make, and of course you did it much more eloquently than I did. But when you make that REST query again, it's that contract, and so when I call some REST endpoint and I do let's say I do a GET by ID, what that's typically going to give me is the full object. And I don't have any real control over that unless there's another endpoint that's now only going to give me part of that. And so what you're saying with GraphQL is that now I can say, hey, I want this by ID, but I only want the name and the address field, that I don't need all of the other fields to come along with that. So that's something you can do in GraphQL, but that's obviously not something then that you can do in REST.
Correct.
Okay. That's very cool. My headphones don't want to stay in place. Stay. There we go.
That's okay. Hearing's only half of the conversation.
It's apparently an important part, though. The other part that I want to ask you about is, you mentioned that the client is then able to say, hey, this is what I want. And then you also mentioned that there's, you know, the ability to ask, hey, what are you capable of? So I want to talk just real quickly then about like a little bit of security and control then on the server side of things. Does the server then have the ability to go, oh, I don't want you to be able to filter based on name, or I don't want you to maybe do like a like statement to use like a SQL type of scenario? Like, you know, one of the things performance-wise that you often want to avoid is doing like and then start with a percent, because then it has to go through all of the records. So one of the things that you might want to be able to do from a server is go, hey, you're not allowed to do that. Are those the types of things you're allowed to limit and filter with GraphQL?
You are. And what's interesting about it is GraphQL specifies how you formulate the request and how you formulate the response. It doesn't really have an opinion on what happens on the server. So I can use a authentication convention. And then when I have someone's identity, then it's really up to me to respond to that request however I want. Now, that's where GraphQL frameworks, implementations, libraries come into play, because most of those will provide. So you're going to see example in my demo that it's a very much opt-in model, that I don't let someone filter the universe unless I choose to opt in to let someone filter the universe. Or if I want to say, based on a role, you have access only to a certain tenant or a certain segment of information, all of that's possible. And that's where you start to look at different clients, because they have different dials and levers for configuring that, so to speak.
Okay. All right, cool. All of that now makes more sense in my head, and hopefully it makes sense in everybody who's watching and in their heads as well. Okay, cool. Let's kick back to your slides, because you were sort of like pointing in a direction there. So I interrupted you. So let's go back to this.
No problem. I wanted to show two things and then definitely jump into code. One is this concept of schema stitching. So I talked about resolvers, and resolvers basically are things you write to surface a bit of data. So I might talk to Azure Cosmos DB, SQL Server, something else. That's my resolvers. But I may already have multiple GraphQL endpoints that are exposed. And there's actually examples of public APIs. For example, there might be a weather info API. There might be a restaurant info API. I can use something called schema stitching, which will actually stand up a GraphQL front end that allows me to specify travel information that gives me a location, weather, restaurants, and it will actually talk to the two different backends and stitch those together. So that's a pretty neat capability. But in talking to teams, these are inside Microsoft and external, there's a lot of benefits that have surfaced from why people use that. One of them is that it's universal. It's not connected. I'm going to be talking about GraphQL in the .NET universe because I'm a .NET PM. But it's definitely, the ecosystem is much broader than that. It allows for a single endpoint. So there's no more discovery, like where do I go for sales? Where do I go for accounting? I can literally have one endpoint that's then load balanced that will go out and provide the data. Overfetching is huge. This idea that I don't get more data than what I need gives me a single lens. And what's interesting is a lot of companies are using it to modernize their stacks. They're taking existing legacy WCF, REST, database backends and putting a GraphQL facade in front of them and then writing all their new apps to talk to GraphQL. And then as they migrate those services to something more modern, they don't have to change the front-end API. They don't have to change the client. It's already aware. So it provides some very useful capabilities in that sense.
Okay, cool. I dig it.
All right. Well, let's do this. Why don't I show you how to build a GraphQL endpoint?
Yeah. And you're going to do that with Entity Framework.
I am going to do that with Entity Framework. We're going to start with a very simple ASP.NET Core application, and we're going to stand up the endpoint. We're going to make it persistent with a SQLite database. We're going to use Entity Framework Core for the communication. And then hopefully, time permitting, we'll actually have a client that then consumes the data and provides a nice UI. And we're going to do all that in a few minutes. So what do you think? What could possibly go wrong?
What could possibly go wrong? Live demos. Why not?
Right. So what I've got here is just a very basic .NET 5 application that's an ASP.NET Core. So if we look at very basic program and startup, pretty much all of this template out of the box does is if I hit this endpoint right here, and I think I can zoom a little bit on that too. Oh, the zoom's going really slow, so we won't do too much of that. Plus, I got my tooltips.
I appreciate the use of Zoom It though. I'm always a fan of that.
We'll bump this up a little bit, but so I've got this map git. So I have this running, and if we look at the website, we get this very boring hello world, which is right up here. So that's our starting point. So the
And you set that up by using .NET new, correct? Which is a command line utility.
Yes. Okay. I did literally .NET new ASP.NET core, I think, -o. And subdirectory or whatever have you for that.
Okay.
All right. So let us add some GraphQL love to this. And what I'm going to use is there's two very popular .NET frameworks for GraphQL. There's GraphQL Net and there's Hot Chocolate. Hot Chocolate happens to be one I'm more familiar with. I've done more with that, so I'm going to choose that. It's not saying it's better, but that's the one I'm going with for this scenario. I think a lot of people are actually familiar with Hot Chocolate. So
I like
we're going to go. You like Hot Chocolate?
I love Hot Chocolate.
But we're going to get into some other cool names too. So let me see how fast I can add Hot Chocolate to this application.
And okay. Just to clarify, so Hot Chocolate, this is an open source project that you're including here.
That is correct.
Okay.
In fact, if we look, now we've got Hot Chocolate. I'm using the latest and greatest 12.0 preview. So that's the only thing I've added here. And if we go into my program startup, we can see in typical ASP.NET middleware fashion, I've got a add GraphQL server here. So I'm adding the middleware, then I'm configuring the middleware. I'm saying map GraphQL to that endpoint. So that's the only change I've made. Now what's happened here is if we refresh our endpoint, we get banana cake pop. What is banana cake pop? This is a built-in IDE, sort of similar to what you would get with a Swagger Swashbuckle that allows me to interact with GraphQL endpoints. Now, I'm not going to zoom or show any capabilities now because I haven't defined any endpoints, but the IDE is here and ready-made. That's something Hot Chocolate provides out of the box as a way to interface with it. And of course, just like anything else, you can turn it off for production so you don't have people hacking on your APIs, but we're going to use this to explore what I'm building while I'm building it.
Okay, that's cool. Are you familiar with Django, by the way?
Not so much. Okay, I've heard of it, but I haven't worked with it.
Never mind.
All right, so let's.
I was going to make a comparison to Django, but if you don't know Django, then it's going to be sort of lost there. But that's all right. Carry on.
Might not be lost on the audience, though, so.
No, one of the things that Django includes is because Django is a Python framework that's designed for creating data-driven web apps. So if you're going to create a front end to a database, Django is a great framework for that. And it includes an admin tool where you can just go in and automatically create items and so forth. And it's pretty slick. So it looks sort of similar to what you had there with the banana interface. Is that what you called it?
Banana. Oh, now I'm second guessing myself. Banana pop cake?
Banana pop
Banana
cake.
cake pop.
Banana cake pop.
Banana
Okay,
cake pop.
there we
Yep.
go.
All right. So what I'm doing now is I'm adding a class for blog. It's a pretty straightforward class. ID, name, URL, has some posts. I have a post class. And then I want to create a type that's going to be my first resolver that tells GraphQL that there's something that I want it to expose. We're going to evolve this over time, but right now, by convention, I'm providing a query that you can make. So I have this class query. I've got a method called get blogs that I have as iQueryable, although right now I've just hard coded. I'm being a little selfish, but developer for life, my blog, right? And so I'm just returning that as queryable. So that creates a place where I can get some data. Pretty simple place, but we're taking baby steps here. Now, if I look at my startup, you'll notice that in my middleware, I'm adding this query type of query. So I'm telling the GraphQL server that there's this class you can go to, and that class has methods on it that give you something interesting. So having done that, let's come back to banana cake pop and let's actually zoom it a little bit and refresh. And hopefully, it doesn't do some wonky things like some things do when you zoom in the web. But now I've got this concept of a schema, and I do need to zoom out so I can refresh. Hold on. So I'm going to do new document. I'm going to refresh. And hopefully, as a result of that, we get some query completion. Let's see. See how it shows blogs? So, by convention, because I said get blogs, it knows that there's a concept called blogs. So that tells me I want to fetch the blogs. This is how I formulate a request. And then on the blogs, there was name, URL, etc. So for example, I can start typing name. So this is what a GraphQL request looks like. I'm saying I would like to grab the blogs query, but all I'm interested in is the name part of that. We'll get into more advanced. Oh, what did I just do? Oh, instead of control four, I did control F4, which of course closed my web window. That's okay, because we will go back to.
Yeah, while that's coming up, so I noticed that you were doing a I noticed that you were doing post there. Do you always use post to interact with GraphQL? Because obviously in REST you would typically use get if you were going to be getting information. Do those verbs change for GraphQL?
No, those verbs don't have to change. And I'll actually talk about that because there's a special way that you define a mutation. Just getting back to banana cake pop.
Now I'm just getting
But
hungry.
yeah, so there's so you're always posting and getting a response, and then you have different ways to specify side effects. And let me talk about that. But first, let's get back to blogs and then name. So if I press the little play button, you can see it gives me blogs name developer for life over here. Now, this is a lot more flexible than just that because I actually included a post on that. So let's say, and post refers back to blogs. So let's say I wanted to format it like this. Let's say I wanted blogs. And let me zoom again while I'm typing this. So I wanted blogs, and then within the blogs, I wanted posts. And in the posts, what I'm interested in is the title. And then I also would like the blog that the post belongs to. And that I just want the name.
Okay, so blog then is the entry point to everything. And so what you're doing here is you're going to step down and say, hey, I want all the posts. For all of the posts, I want the title. And then as a child property to each post, I then want the name of the blog. So you're basically sort of reversing the order there, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
All right, so let's play this. And now we get the post title and the blog with the name Developer for Life. So we've evolved it somewhat with that. So that's interesting, but very limited right now. So what I want to do is remove some limitations. So I'm going to move on to my next step. And in this step, we're introducing Entity Framework Core. Now I'm using this for two reasons. One is it's probably one of the fastest, easiest ways I can get from this application to a actual working database. And two is because it works very nicely with GraphQL. So I've got a Cedar application. This will actually go out and grab the RSS feeds from the blogs and populate them and load it to the database. But how does the database work? I just want to show that I didn't change my blog class. I did not change my post class. Those are remaining the same, but I've got this blogs context. A blogs context is the way that you tell Entity Framework Core that you're interested in doing something with a domain class. So here I'm telling it out of all the classes, I've got a program class, a query class, a Cedar class. I'm just interested in persisting blogs and posts to the database. So I'm exposing those. I'm telling it how they relate. So every blog has multiple posts, but posts only have one blog. So it's just describing the relationship. That is pretty much all I need to establish an API to a database.
And all of that is pretty core, no pun intended, EF core code. Like there's like, if you were going to be doing anything with EF core, that's pretty much like, you know, EF core 101 syntax of here's my DB set for posts. Here's my DB set for blogs. And then here's the relationship between them.
You got it.
Okay.
So in my
dependency, I do remember some entity framework.
You do. So I'm still adding the same query type. Here I'm adding the context to dependency injection, so it's available elsewhere. And I'm telling it to use SQLite. So that's one of the features of Entity Framework Core, is that we have different database providers. It'll work with SQL Server, with in-memory, with Azure Cosmos DB. And you can use that same context with different databases. So we actually have some customers who might use the same DB context and fan out to a SQL database and a Cosmos DB database. So here I'm telling it to use SQLite. I'm also using our simple logging to log database command so we can see what happens with the database as we use this.
And that's doing a bit of dependency injection. So it's basically telling your ASP.NET Core application, hey, this is where my database is. And so if you were going to go to production with this, you'd be telling it to use SQL Server or MySQL or whatever database it is that you might be using.
You got it.
Okay.
And the other thing that does for us is we can now update this, and instead of hard coding the results, I'm basically injecting the context that I just configured, and that context exposes the entities as queryables. So this is the only code it takes to now glue GraphQL to Entity Framework Core.
Okay. So what's going to happen here then is now when I write my EF, sorry, when I write my GraphQL command, I'm going to start that over again, make sure I'm saying this correctly. I'm going to write my GraphQL command. I'm going to send that up to the server, which is running ASP.NET Core. That's then going to intercept that. It's going to send that into the GraphQL service, hot chocolate in this case, which is then going to be able to use EF Core. So it's going to translate that into a link query for EF Core. EF Core is then going to translate that link into the SQLite command and go get the data. And then it's, you know, basically just undoing that stack to send it back out the door.
That is the theory.
Perfect.
Let's see how the theory holds up. All right. So we're going to go back to Banana Cake Pop. And I'm just going to use the same query. And I'm just going to rerun it. And what you'll see is these posts came back as null. So I'm going to address that in a second. But let me back up on blogs. And let me put name and URL up here near the top. Actually don't need the commas. So I'm gonna run that. You can see we indeed are getting blogs. I got developer for life and someone named Geek Trainer has this geektrainer.dev blog.
Don't know who that is.
So it's getting that, but the posts are coming back as null. Why is that? Well, let's pop back over and look at our SQL that's being generated. Don't you hate that when you're tabbing and you overshoot?
Yes.
So what it's doing is it's selecting ID, name, URL from blogs as B. I didn't even ask for the ID. So it's clearly just grabbing every field and it's not even joining to post. And this is because out of the box, Hot Chocolate just knows to ask EF Core a question. It doesn't know how to take all of my parameters and turn them into an expression tree and pass them off to EF Core to then translate into SQL. To do that requires one more step, and this is one that I hope you appreciate the work involved with this.
I want to highlight here the part that he mentioned there is what's happening is it's still grabbing every column, so it's not doing that full translation. So if you were to leave it like this, let's say I just wanted like the name or something, what would happen is the data would come out of the database into the server, like all of it, and now the server would then wind up trimming it before it sent it back to the client, which, okay, fine, that gets you part of the way of limiting the data, but now you're still getting data out of the database that you didn't need, that we really want to make sure that we're doing it fully from front to back there, where we're just getting the data back that we want.
Right. So what I did is I added two things. I added this use projection attribute onto my method. And in the startup, I added projections.
Okay.
So what I'm opting into, what projections does is projections tells Hot Chocolate to take the structure of your GraphQL query and turn that into an expression tree. So now it's doing all the work of the queryable. So this is not specific to Entity Framework Core. If you're using something else that also recognizes link queries, it'll work equally as well with that. But with that little tweak, so that we're telling it, yes, we've got something that can deal with expression trees. I'm going to refresh this. And boom. We get data. And if we look at our SQL, you can see we've got SQL that's selecting just the data that we're interested in.
That's cool. So I want to sort of go back and try and unpack this just to highlight the coolness of all of this. So what we're looking to have happen is my GraphQL gets translated into link. Then that link is going to get translated into the SQL. So originally, what was happening was the GraphQL wasn't doing that full translation into link. So as a result, when it went back to my database, it was just go get everything, which is not really what we wanted. We only want specific items here. So by adding in that add projections, now my GraphQL is being properly translated into link, and then my link is being properly translated into SQL.
Correct.
Okay, cool.
All right, so one thing I want to point out before the next step too is if we look over here on the left, we've got our schema definition in Banana Pop Cake. So this is what it's obtained. And I can expand that. And it shows me that there's something called blogs. And I'm careful not to hit F4.
Yeah.
Blogs has something called posts. Posts comes back to blogs and so on and so forth. We can go add infinitum. But there's no clear mechanism here for me to do something like filter or sort or order by. Now, something that's important with GraphQL is there's no GraphQL specification for sorting, paging, or filtering. It just tells you here's how you can shape data and here's how you can parameterize it. But there are conventions people use in order to do that. So having said that, let me switch back to my document.
If it would come back.
Yeah, we can always cheat and open a new document too. All right, so let's add one more enhancement to this application.
Actually, before you do that, just because you were right there, and I apologize for interrupting your train of thought here, there was a great question that I want to make sure I get threaded into here. And since you're on the screen, this is sort of, I think, the perfect time to ask this. So Elliot asked the question, when do you recommend using add DB context versus add DB context factory?
Very, very simple. If you're structuring your application in such a way that you want your component to grab a context, do something with it, and that lifetime scope is fine for the component, then add DB context is fine. That's a traditional MVC. If you're following what we call a context per operation, which is instead of taking a context, holding on to the context, doing several things with it and updating it. For example, if I'm writing a WPF application, I can hold on to a context because it's in the user's application space.
Right.
Right. If I'm writing a Blazor server app, things get a little trickier because now state's being managed on the server. It's in a circuit. There's a lot going on. And so to avoid conflicts, because let's say I scope a context to a user's login and I do add DB context and it's scoped to the user and that user opens two tabs. DB contexts aren't thread safe. And so what can happen is the state of one can clobber the state of another. It's not actually two contexts because they're sharing it because of the scope. So our recommendation and the reason why we created the factory is if I do a factory per operation, so instead if I code those components so that when I grab something, I just create a context, grab it, and then the context goes away. Then the factory is the way to do that because it allows you to provide configuration and then grab a context that's pre-configured for you. So you don't have to do the use SQLite, whatever, every time you're making a new context, right? You can just configure it to the factory, and then the factory will keep handing you new contexts with those configurations. Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. And Cecil Philip also mentioned that he loves the name Banana Cake Pop and can't say it with a straight face.
Banana Cake Pop, Banana Cake Pop, Banana Cake Pop. All right, well, let's work a little bit more magic. And what I'm going to do is add two things. Notice I have add filtering and add sorting right here. And then if we look at the query, so that just enables the middleware.
Okay.
So I'm opting into, okay, it's possible to filter and sort. Then on my GraphQL definition, use projection, use filtering. use sorting. So I've opted in on this specific method. So you can see that some methods I may decide not to provide filtering and sorting.
Okay. That makes sense. So that query that you've created there, that's sort of acting as your code entry point into the world that GraphQL can see. So I both have to tell GraphQL, hey, we're going to allow for filtering and sorting, but then I also have to make sure that this query object, this entry point that GraphQL is actually going to be able to use, supports filtering and sorting in my case.
Right. And of course, I'm doing a live demo building this on the fly. There are a lot of very fine-grained controls that we don't have time to get into that it provides. So I can have more fidelity than this, but this is the easy way to say, okay, we're going to have sorting. But I could even restrict sorting to certain fields, et cetera. Mm. So right now, just making that one change, if we come back to here and we refresh, what you're going to see is when I expand my schema, blogs now has this parentheses with dot, dot, dot on them. And if I expand, what field is it? If we zoom in here, it's no longer just a blog. It's taking parameters that are in that. And again, I have IntelliSense, if you will, in the web. Let me see if I can toggle back. So now let's say I want just Blazor posts. So I'm going to say blogs. Well, actually, let's just filter it to your blog. So I've got where. And then I can say, oh, what's going on? Hold on. Let me make sure I'm doing this right. Yep, blogs. Oh, that's right. It'll clear up once I do this. Where name.
There it is.
And then I can say contains. Come on, work with me here. Contains geek. And then blog is not enough to describe everything I want. So I'm going to say, give me the name and the URL.
Okay, so above you're putting in the filter saying, hey, I only want blogs where the name contains geek. And then you're saying, okay, now once you get that data, all I want is the name and the URL.
Correct. And that's exactly what we get.
Perfect.
If we look at our SQL, we can see here, it's just getting the name and the URL where name is not null. And in string, this is a SQLite syntax for doing that search. So let's do one other variation because I also added sorting. So I can say basically blogs order by. I think I have this correct. Maybe it's sort by.
You know, we need fewer synonyms in the English language.
I've been doing this day and night, and I'm like going, what? All right, I should be able to expand it from here. Why am I missing the, where is the, there we go, over here. So it's just order.
Order.
So if you looked at the side, I clicked on the cube and it tells me I've got this blog filter input, blog sort input.
Yeah, and it shows you the arguments. Okay, that makes sense.
So if we go back to our document.
I never would have guessed order. Like I sort, sure, sort by absolutely, and order by obviously, but I never would have guessed just the word order.
And look, if I put an O, I'm getting autocomplete now, which is what I tried to do earlier. So we're going to do name and then descending. And then, of course, that's not enough. We have to tell it what we want from it. So let's, even though we're sorting by the name, let's get the URL just to be fun. And then it does yours first and mine second, because yours is Geek Trainer and mine's Developer for Life. And we got the URLs. So again, very fine grain.
Okay. Yep. Okay.
Very fine grain control. So the last thing that I'll show you is,
and you can see the SQL there as well, that the you've got the order by in there.
Right.
Yep.
I can also filter on sub entities on the blog. So if we look at the blog right now, you'll see the posts is just a standalone collection. And if we looked at the schema, there's no sorting or filtering on posts yet. But if we go to the next step and look at the code, I'm using those same tags, use filtering and use sorting on posts. So now I have pretty much all the power that I want, because what I can do is I can structure a query like this. I can say, my system's wonky. Happens when you're sharing and streaming. And all right, so yeah. I can say blogs, posts, and then inside of posts, I'll say where, title, contains, laser. And then from that, we're going to get the, let's just do title. And we'll run that. And we get that.
Okay.
So while I'm here too, I'll just note, I'm going through blogs, but I could just as easily provide an endpoint that says get posts that lets me go directly to posts. So if I wanted to do that, the other thing is that this may or may not work because of something I didn't tag on the context, but a GraphQL query can fetch multiple items in the same request. So I could say for blog, let's say blog.
Do you want to move your cursor out of the way real quick?
Sure thing. And I'll zoom too.
Perfect.
So I could say something like blog sites, blogs, name. Then I can do the keyboard response is so slow. Posts, titles, all right, I'm doing something wrong. Blogs, posts, title.
Yeah, while you're putting that in, the syntax on GraphQL, Cecil actually mentioned this as well, is, you know, the most uncomfortable thing for me personally with GraphQL is the query language. It takes a second. Yeah, I'm watching you put this in, and it's funny because it looks like JSON, but it's not. It looks sort of like doing MongoDB queries, but it's not. It sort of looks a little bit like doing SQL, but it's not. Like it's this really kind of a funky amalgamation. It's obviously super powerful and super popular, but it definitely looks like it takes a minute. Yeah, fortunately you've got Banana Cake Pop to help you navigate the syntax here.
So what's happening is this is getting an error because of what I said with the thread safety for the DB context. Mm. So I can actually tag it to be serializable. I'm not going to take that time because I want to show the client. But this would, if I had tagged the context correctly, pull back the two data sets. Basically, right now, blog sites is null because that failed because post titles got there first. But just by putting a single tag we can basically tell it to run these in serial, and then we would get both results back. So
okay.
I should have been more prepared for that one, but that's okay.
That's all
because
right.
The last thing I want to show you is, while I still have this endpoint running, is I'm going to pop over to another project that I made, and I'm not going to build this one because of time.
It's perfect. I got 10 minutes left, so I think we're pretty much spot on.
Let's take a look at the code for this. This is the client, and the client is fun too because what you use for the client is a strawberry shake. So we used hot chocolate and a banana cake pop, right, for the server. For the client, we're going to close out this.
You know, this is my own fault. I had a salad for lunch because I was, you know, trying to be a little bit healthy here. And now it's just nothing but conversation about hot chocolate. Strawberry shakes.
So I'm going to be going really fast for this just because of time. But basically, the steps I created a Blazor project, and then I installed a tool for Strawberry Shake. The tool does two things. One is it lets me point at a GraphQL endpoint, and it pulls back this schema. This schema is basically everything it discovered about the capabilities of that endpoint. So it's basically embedded in my project. But that schema informs mechanisms I can create for interacting with GraphQL. And then the other thing that it does is it provides a service that I believe uses source compilers to generate code based on what I specify. And what is it I specify? Well, I created two what we call schemas here. One is get posts, and notice that I've got this variable for a blog ID, variable for a filter, variable for an order. And then I'm basically saying blogs where the ID is the blog ID, posts where filter, order where filter. We can ignore all this. This is me saying that this is one of the shapes of requests that I want to make to the GraphQL endpoint. This is totally for the client's sake. Because what will happen when I create this is it will automatically, when I build, generate a set of clients that I can then use in my code. Let me actually run this and show you what it looks like running, and then I'll show you the code, and then we'll wrap for some final questions.
Perfect.
So I'm going to jump down here because I think it'll be better to see the context of it running. And then we're going to do URLs. Actually, I need to go to the subdirectory. .NET run and URLs. Or we can call them URLs if you prefer. Earls, and I'm just doing this so it doesn't collide with the endpoint, right? My endpoint's on 5001. So I'm going to run the Blazor WebAssembly app on 5002. And I may have shared this trick on our last session, but if you find the buildings taking longer than expected, you just move the mouse clockwise and speed it up.
Yep.
And we should see the build just magically. Yep, there we go. So we'll click through to this. And here's my Blazor Wednesday app. And I've got blogs on Developer for Life, Geek Trainer, so I'll select yours first. And there's some posts that it's pulled from that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to select mine. And I'm going to say, just show me the ones from 2021. And let's actually only show the ones that have the word multi in them. And there we go. So that's the application. What's interesting is if we come back to my server, we can see we've got our SQL statements that, again, are just executing exactly what we want. So everything's flowing from the client to the front end. To look at the code involved for this, I'm going to pop over to my Blazor WebAssembly project. And again, all I did was created this file to specify the shape of the API that I want. So here's one that just gives me the blogs. Here's one that gets me the posts for a blog. If we look at my page code behind, let me give us some space here. So this is my template. This is pretty much standard Blazor Razor syntax if people are used to it. So here's here's the code to get the list of blogs. So I awaited client get blogs, execute async. It's automatically sorted. It gives me just the properties I want. Strawberry Shake gives me an interface that's shaped exactly like the data I want. And I'm good to go. Now, if I want to filter posts, I've got this load post async. Let's see what that looks like. So this one is actually creating a filter, and it's building out the filter based on what I've entered. And then once it's done building the filter, it's get post execute async, passing the parameters in, and then grabbing these to an array. Okay. So very straightforward C-sharp style idiomatic API for doing that. But I think the key here is I've got a client that's getting the shape of data it wants, but through the use of Hot Chocolate, the technology of GraphQL, Entity Framework Core, I'm able to not only drive that request all the way through to the backend, but that backend is running as efficiently as possible. The database is only getting the data it needs, and the network is only sending the data that my application requests.
And I think that that's the really big part to me, that, you know, the big thing that I knew about GraphQL was the fact that it gives the client a bit more control over how it is that they want to get the data. But the moment that I heard that, my brain immediately thought is, okay, that's got to be really difficult to set up on the server, just because, you know, clients could, of course, request their data in all sorts of different ways. And so that was the part that really caught my attention, was how you were able to set up the server side of things with really just a handful of lines of code and a couple of technologies that just, you know, made me and everybody else that's watching hungry.
And that's really what happened with me. And it's happened with a few technology over the years, but this is when I started to look at, it was like, oh, another API technology. Great. You know, and then I started to dig into it and look at the possibilities and capabilities. And now if I were to build a line of business Blazor app, I would want to build it with GraphQL just because of what I've shown here.
Yeah, I dig that. And I also appreciate the fact that the server does still get control over over, you know, how the data is going to be exposed out. So it's not, you know, you're not just turning everything over to the client.
Right.
Cool.
I'm trying to see if I've got auto completion. No, that's okay. I'll leave
that one alone. So where can people find you, Jeremy?
Right up here, Jeremy at Jeremy Lickness on Twitter. They can find me at my blog, which is blog.jeremylickness.com. Pretty much, if you can get my last name spelled correctly, which I tell people it's Lickness without the C, then you can find me on the web. I've got a Twitter, I've got a blog, I've got a LinkedIn. And then the other interesting thing that I always share, just because I'm a huge advocate, I was diagnosed early last year with young onset Parkinson's disease, and I actually was just invited to join the board for a nonprofit organization. Very excited about that. I'm the technology chair for that. But I have a blog called strengthwithparkinsons.com that details my personal journey with Parkinson's, and I'll be detailing things that happen. So far, I haven't had many challenges with work, for example, but there are things that come up, and I think it's important to share that and be transparent. So I've set that up.
That's fantastic. Congratulations for sharing that, and congratulations on, well, sorry, I'm going to do that sentence all over again. Thank you for sharing that and sharing your journey, and congratulations on your awarding of the post. All of that is all of that's great.
Thanks.
So, yeah. Thank you, thank you. Jeremy, thank you for joining. It's always great to hang out. We should try and do this in person, especially, now with vaccines and all of that. So yeah, so thanks for joining. And thank you to everybody for tuning in to Web Wednesday. We're back next week, if I remember correctly. I'm pretty sure we've got Ashku next week to talk about cool MR stuff. And she's just also fantastic to chat with. So definitely come back for that. And thanks again to Jeremy. Go find him on Twitter and on his blog. And yeah, thanks for tuning in.
Thank you. Appreciate everyone.
Bye.